And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in the clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. This is Martin Willis, your host. We have Thomas Wertman. He is an Ohioan ufologist, or a ufologist from Ohio. And this show had to be pre-recorded as his schedule does not work on Wednesday evenings. I want to say the first hour is pre-recorded. If you're listening live, I'll still be in the chat room at podcastufo.com. In hour two, we have my good friend Chip Reichenthal, and he'll be speaking about hypnosis of abductees, his own sighting, and an interesting topic, ETs versus ghosts, which may be proven first. That sounds really interesting. Just so there's no confusion, Chip will be live in the second hour. So if you want to interact on the chat room then with him, ask questions, feel free to. Well, Tom Wertman is coming up right after the news with Alejandro Rojas from Open Minds Radio. And I want to thank everyone for their support. If you have not subscribed yet and you want to hear the full show, go to getjoyride.com/podcastufo. The link is right on our website. Subscribers pay $1 a month or more to access the full two-hour show. And that includes a private link to iTunes and several other listening media. That's it for me for now. So what is going on, Alejandro?
Well, I am trying to determine whether or not my coworkers who have been accused of being reptilian aliens truly are. Because if I can prove that, or at least convince myself of it, I might be able to be on television.
I think you can convince yourself of it.
That's the easy part.
Yeah. So tell me, how does that work?
Well, I got this email from Go Lucky today, and they are the people who do the show Hangar One and Disclose Files, some other goofy UFO show. I think the UFO shows these days are terrible, personally. But, yeah, they sent this weird email saying, "Oh, please, we need someone who knows about aliens walking among us or reptilians walking among us immediately Friday.
I got something like this about, I got something like this about like a month ago.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, but it didn't say reptilians. It just said that aliens are walking among us type of thing.
Yeah.
So
they need someone by Friday.
So, listeners, if you feel that, contact Alejandro Rojas at Open Minds.
No, don't contact me. Contact Go Lucky. Just Google Go Lucky and email them and say, "Oh, I know all about it. My neighbors are reptilians." And then you'll go on TV and maybe you'll be famous.
Hey, speaking of UFOs.
Like Honey Boo Boo.
UFO shows, and I tend to agree with you. But Ben Hansen, last time I spoke with him, he was potentially starting a show that sounded like it was going to be great. Have you heard of any movement on that?
No, I'm not sure. I think that was going to be by the Smithsonian Channel. From what I understand, that was going to air in Canada first.
That's right.
And I'm not sure if it's come to the States yet. But, yeah, you know, who knows? I've done a few TV shows. You have done TV, but in a different arena, I suppose. But you never know. You know, you go do the interview. You feel great about it. You're strutting around all, you know, and then it airs and it's like, oh, what did they do?
Yeah, the editing.
I did not say that. And it's disappointing, depressing, and unfortunate. That's how I feel about Hangar One, quite frankly, and a number of the other shows. So, Yeah, so you never know. And these days it gets into the editing and they just don't care about the facts. They don't care about the true story in their reality programs. And it's really unfortunate because I think in this field that the real stories and the real mysteries are so fascinating.
I do too. Yeah, it's the fluff they want. If it's a little boring to them, they want to make it more exciting, and that's all it's about is ratings, really.
And the unfortunate part is they feel that their fiction that they make up is more exciting than the genuine mystery, and they're often wrong.
I think,
and they're just too lazy to look into the facts, and it's easier just to write the script before you even get your so-called experts to come and say anything. So it's unfortunate.
And I feel the same, you know, happened with James Fox.
Oh, that was Chasing UFOs. I actually, because of James Fox, I was in it, but I also helped them a lot with developing episodes and getting in touch with people. For months I was helping them. And, James Fox and I and Ben McGee and others felt that it would be better, and unfortunately, they did the same thing. They just kind of destroyed it.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Yeah,
too bad.
Yeah, it is. So, what's happening with the news this week?
Well, here's something I never would have imagined. You know, Jason McClellan and I talk about the space news and how we're getting so close all the time to the discovery of life elsewhere. You know, mainstream science is getting so close, and we get closer and closer, new evidence all the time. And this is new evidence that none of us could have even seen coming. That is, as exciting as the rest. And you probably heard of this, but the Cassini spacecraft has made some discoveries around the moon.
Saturn's moon.
Saturn's moon Enceladus.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially 10 years ago, they noticed it had geysers, and they thought, wow, that's interesting. And they noted it in their notepad. But now the Cassini spacecraft has been able to analyze what's been coming out of those geysers and essentially the makeup of the water and well, that's coming out of there. They believe that it must be coming out of geysers that are at the sea floors of these vast oceans under the ice on this moon, and that it's very warm, like 194 degrees at these vents, these thermal vents. And so the water is warm enough for life. So you've got this water, you know, that there's an area of water there where we would be comfortable. Even
really,
so pretty exciting.
Squid and plankton squirting out of the geyser.
There could be squid. There could be plankton. There could be a reptilian, amphibious sort of intelligent creature that has developed civilizations.
And if they get here quick enough, they could be on TV.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
or they could. So, yeah. So this is exciting, though. Just another big step towards the inevitable discovery.
And, you know, it's funny, my son was telling me about this, like, what was it, like a week ago or something like that?
Yeah.
This came out? Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, that this came out? Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. It came out a few days ago. So pretty exciting.
It is. And I think we are creeping toward that fact.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did have a conversation with Jason out in Phoenix about that.
Yeah.
And he was a little noncommittal about saying 100%. That he thought it was going to be this year.
Oh, really? We've got this bet. Well, I think he said in the next 2 years. But I thought his bet that he was saying within the next year.
Yeah, I think he was giving himself a little bit of wiggle room when I was.
He amended it. Okay.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah.
2 years ain't bad, but that's still, you know, you gotta be a man and stand by your numbers. I think so.
That's right.
I'll have to give him a bit of guff for that.
I hope you do. Yeah. All right, so what else is going on?
Well, UFOs over Oklahoma City. So this is exciting. I don't know if you've seen this, but this is creating a buzz out there. Yeah, this is essentially the morning news cam goes to their video cam that's over a casino called Grand Casino outside of Oklahoma City, and this is Oklahoma City news. They're looking at the traffic on the highway early in the morning, and zip, you see this little light quickly move in front of the camera. Well, the newscast, KOCO, Coco, they didn't shy away from this. They took that 13 seconds of this thing flying across. They didn't reference it or seemingly notice it during the cast, but they put it online, and so people have been looking at it and speculating. A lot of people have been saying, you know, maybe it's a bug, maybe it's a bird. The next day, actually, KOCO went to the local college and asked a couple professors. They believed it could be a small meteor, like a meteorite, like an even pea-sized meteorite zipping across. But, you know, Mark D'Antonio, for instance, today, the photo analyst for MUFON, he adamantly disagrees with that. He says that's ridiculous.
I do, too, because there's, for one thing, you can see it. Like, you can see it when it's all the way down to the ground, but it doesn't streak like a meteor would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the constant streak you see in person. These are.
Well, and I don't think you can see it go all the way to the ground, or at least, I don't know. You know,
dissolve. Well, it sort of hesitates a little bit down near the ground. If you watch it, I saw this last Sunday, and I watched it over and over again, and it looks like when it's heading down toward the ground, it doesn't show that it's hitting the ground, but it almost looks like it hesitates a little bit. Something's a little funny about the thing.
Well, what I think, my theory, personal theory, is that it's a very low frames per second, which is common for cameras like that because it saves on memory. Mm-hmm. And so that's it. So it looks kind of jittery, and that at the end there's a dissolve into the next scene, and so it looks like it's moving, but it's just like the dissolve function, you know, making it look weird. So that's what I think. I don't know, but regardless, what was interesting is Mark wasn't sure what it was at first. He thought it might be a meteorite, but he, in looking at it, he totally does not think that anymore. However, he looked at it on a really large screen, and he says he thinks now it might be a bird that's illuminated by the nearby light. But
isn't that something?
It's not obvious what it is, which just shows what an interesting video it is. So people will have to check that out. I did draw the similarities between it and a video that was taken on a drone in the Silicon Valley lately.
Oh, that we talked about last week.
We talked about that last week. That one is more likely to be a bug, but it's also a white object zipping by. But, pretty interesting video.
It is. It is. And last but not least,
this is the big news out there, which is Jimmy Kimmel talking to Obama about UFOs. So this is causing a lot of controversy, of course, as it would. But Jimmy Kimmel, the day before this happened, I had read an LA Times piece where he said, I think I'm going to ask Obama about UFOs, just like I did with Clinton. And of course, I got excited and was thinking, well, I hope he does. And he did. So just like he did with Clinton, he said, you know, if I were to be president, which he says he never would become president, the first thing he would do is run to where the files about Area 51 and UFOs are, because he really wants to find out. President Obama said, well, that's why you're never going to be president.
That's right. It's pretty funny.
It was really funny, I thought. So Jimmy Kimmel kept talking about this. Obama essentially said that, you know, I can't tell you because the aliens won't let us. They keep strict control over us. And Jimmy Kimmel said, well, you know, Clinton said he looked into it and he didn't find anything. And Obama said, well, that's what we're told to say. So, and at one point he said, I can't reveal anything. And they're laughing, and he's joking the entire time. I saw it as laughing and joking. It seems like the majority of Americans or people around the world did feel that way. But, of course, you do have a number of people who are like, I can't believe you people think he's joking. He's telling the truth. The aliens won't let him talk, and that's what they're told to say. And a lot of our colleagues, some of the people we've interviewed, both of us, and some of them that are more well-known, who we may have interviewed often, are coming out and saying, yeah, he's probably telling the truth, you know, just trying to make a joke of it. So I don't know. That's what happens. In my story, I also wrote about, you know, a similar situation that happened back in 1982 when Steven Spielberg went to the White House to screen E.T. and with Ronald and Nancy Reagan. And at the end, Ronald Reagan stood up and said, you know, there's not many people who know just how real this is. And everybody started laughing. Spielberg has said himself he thinks Reagan was joking. He's a ufologist, and he hopes he was hoping, you know, he wishes he wasn't joking and it was real, but that he was just joking. But of course, a lot of our fellow researchers in this case believe that Reagan was not joking as well. So that's what happens.
Well, he many times, I think like three times during his presidency, he did say something along the lines with, if we were being attacked by, you know, someone from another world, we would all join together. And actually, Bill Clinton said the same thing on Jimmy Kimmel, you know, a very similar thing.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway.
So what's that make you think? What do you think? Are you telling me you think, which is fine, I respect other opinions. Do you think Obama, Clinton, and Reagan are hiding something?
I really don't know. And I really think that if there was something to hide that the government is hiding, that I think it's very possible that the government would not let the president know. It's a need to know type of situation. That's
Clinton has said on this topic, I wouldn't be the first president that career bureaucrats have lied to. And it makes sense that if there is a project out there, you know, it would be a need to know. And why would you tell the president? You probably wouldn't want to tell any politician.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, hey, this has been fun, and I could go on and on forever about this, but I really should probably let the guests do a little bit of talking.
Yeah. So, well, if you want. All right, whatever. Kick me to the curb.
Just until next week.
So, all right.
Thanks a lot, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Okay, talk to you next week.
So hang in for the music clip. We'll be right back with our guest, Tom Wertman. Tom Wertman, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Great, and thanks for joining us for the show. I did mention earlier in the monologue that this is pre-recorded because of the schedules just didn't work. But actually, the very first listener to this podcast, Scott, you did meet him at one of your talks out there, and he suggested to have you on, and here you are. How about that?
Well, yeah, and you mentioned Scott, and we kind of talked a little bit earlier about a description about Scott. He's a wonderful gentleman on there, and I mean, he was very much into the talk we did that night, and I appreciate him, you know, giving you my contact information on there.
Yeah, we know Scott by the mega beard he has. He has a really cool beard.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
That was an easy identification when you pointed that out.
So, Tom, who are you? Well, tell the listening audience who you are. I know you have a number of titles, but one of the things I did read about you is you and I kind of share the same interest in science. So I like that about you. And go ahead and tell the listening audience who you are.
Well, my name is Tom Wertman, and I'm the state director for the Mutual UFO Network for Ohio. I'm also a member of the STAR team for MUFON itself. And I'm also part of the case assistant group, which works with doing international cases, investigations out there. This is something that, you know, when I got into this, it was just, I call it a midlife crisis. That's the best way to kind of describe it. Because, you know, we've bust our hind ends for how many years now? Like, I'm 60 years old, and I'm thinking, I've worked my hind end off for 42 years. You raise a family, you raise the kids, you take and chase the kids down, you help them out all these years, get them off to their start. And now all of a sudden you hit midlife crisis, and it's kind of now, I guess you could say, me time. And when I went through that realization myself, you know, this is male logic now. I went through these three stages. One was I always asked the wife, I said, you know, I'd love to have a Corvette. And she's like, you can't have a Corvette. It's impractical. We've got kids. I said, kids are going to go on. Get rid of the impracticality of that. I want the vet. Well, she's gone, and the vet's in the garage now. That's another thing that happens in life with some of us, too. Well,
she should have listened to you.
That's right. Here's male logic number two. You know, male logic number two was I got rid of a motorcycle not long after we got married. There goes the Harley. And the guys out here probably listening to the show going, you got rid of the Harley? What type of idiot are you? Probably should get rid of her instead of Harley, you know? Well, again, like I said, she's gone, so the motorcycle's not in the garage to keep the Corvette company. Again, that's just male logic. But then the third thing they did is I said, you know, I said, as all these years, like we were talking earlier, you know, we both had similar interests in ufology. And mine started back in the mid-1960s. We had the Book of the Month Club in school, and I think it cost me like a grand total of like 35 or 50 cents to buy Frank Edwards' Flying Saucer Serious Business. And when I read that book, it was my first book of that nature, I was hooked. And I read that book from front to back. I mean, I wore the book out pretty much. And I remember, even as a kid, making notes in the margins on my thoughts about different topics he presented in the book. And one of those in particular is there's a photograph from McMinnville, Oregon.
Oh, yes.
And as a kid, I remember looking at that photograph over and over again saying, you know, where's the wires? Don't see them. Where's the strings? Don't see that. And I just made a note in the margin saying, I don't know what it is. And here to this day, that photograph still stands up as one of the best photographs on UFOs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they even have a festival out there once a year.
Exactly. And I've never been there, but it's something I'd really love to do. But that was where I kind of started from. And then, like I say, you know, we go on and we raise a family. I went out and got 2 degrees. I've got a bachelor's in business, specialized in HR. I've also got a master's in education. And I've been involved now in education for, this is going on 33 years. And like I say, now it's me time. And I also see, you know, some things by being involved in this field is, I guess you could say, synchronicities. You know, things happen for a certain reason. And when I got this idea to start, you know, pursuing, you know, my earlier interest back in ufology, I started wondering if there's anybody who does this stuff.
Huh.
And I just happened to be listening to another radio show that night. It was discussing UFOs. And I went on the internet and did a little Google search, and I found a group called the Cleveland Ufology Project. They make the claim as being the oldest group, not just in Ohio, but the world, founded in 1952. And they've been meeting ever since. I went to their first meeting, and here's the synchronicity. It was their first meeting is only 2 miles from where I live. And it was like 2 days after I found on the internet. I became a member. I started getting involved more with the group. And that was the same time as, you know, this group does a lot of general interest stuff. They're very good at it. You've got some great people in the organization. But I want to go farther. And that's why I found MUFON and then got certified as a field investigator and started doing investigations. And from that start, roughly almost 6 years ago now, I've done, I think, maybe off the top of my head, 600 cases,
wow,
investigations. And several hundred of those have actually been in Canada, the United Kingdom, and even stretching down into Puerto Rico and so forth. And I found that when I started doing investigations, number one, I love to talk to people because they're seeing things they can't explain. Reality, probably 80% of those can be explained out there. And as I got involved with it, I started becoming more adept in investigation skills. I'm very computer literate. I started expanding my skills with the computer, doing analysis, doing investigations. And over these years, I've had some real gems of investigations that have just jumped out. And I tell people openly, I said, sometimes you've got to turn over 100 cases before you find that one gem, by turning over 100 rocks.
Mm-hmm.
But when you find that gem out there, it makes going through those 100 cases worth it.
I bet. So let's talk about some of those gems? We don't have to right now. You can keep going if you'd like, but I'd love to hear about those gems.
Anytime you like. I mean, there was actually two of them kind of stand out. And one of the cases that stands out was one that we had happen here in Ohio. I received a phone call at home one afternoon, and it was from Craig Lang, who's in charge of cases for, in this case, went to the STAR team, our immediate response team, and he notified me that there was a incident where two gentlemen down in southern Ohio in a state park called Salt Fork had experience with missing time. The gentlemen were doing an all-night fishing trip. They went down in the evening on a Friday evening, and it was early Saturday morning that they discovered that they'd missed 3.5 hours of time they couldn't explain. And when I got the phone call, I immediately called the witnesses up, talked to the witness, got background information on the witnesses. One was early 40s, another one 19 years old. Very nice individual on the phone. And what I did is I talked the senior two into getting both of them to go right back into, I guess you could say, basically the lion's den that night. They'd gotten in at the house sometime early morning. And when I talked to them, it was roughly right around 10 or 11 o'clock. I hopped in the car and met them, and I had to drive down to southern Ohio. And we got back down there that evening, and we retraced all the events that they had. And it was a really unique case because here they were sitting along a lake down there called Salt Fork, and they had their fishing poles in the water. And they're just kind of sitting back, you know, rebaiting their hooks every half hour. They're going back and putting wood in the fire every half hour, and even went as far as playing a game with each other, saying, you know, we've got so many minutes left before we have to go back and put wood in the fire. And they would guess to see how close they could come to exactly 1/2 of an hour. So they'd been doing that not just that night, but other nights previous to that when they went down fishing. It was approximately about 10:30 when they saw the first of lights to the north hovering above a tree line. They watched them for a short time. And then they went back to fishing, kind of disregarded the lights that they'd seen. 11:30, lights come back again. They're hovering back and forth along the same tree line area, very bright. As if in this case, it was like much brighter than a normal star, almost like if maybe like an aircraft was right on top of them. When I did my initial investigation that same day, there were a couple aircraft, but not in that same exact location they were describing. About 1:30 in the morning, they remembered hearing like a real shrill voice, and the shrill voice sounded almost female, and at that point they started getting spooked. Now, here were two gentlemen who had been fishing at the same location, not just once, but they'd had probably 1,000 hours fishing or more at that same location. So they knew that area inside and out. Well, it spooked them enough that they almost hopped in their car and left that day, or actually their truck and left. Well, they stayed, and one of the gentlemen was up the under one, the 19-year-old was up baiting his hook. And the next thing they remembered was the 40-some-year-old looked at his cell phone and said, "Hey, dude, you're not going to believe this." He goes, "What?" He goes, "It's 5:19 in the morning."
Wow.
So they don't remember anything from 1:30 till 5:19 in the morning. And they said, first of all, the 19-year-old would never stood by his fishing line for 3 hours and 45 minutes without, you know, doing something else. I mean, he would have been doing something else that whole time. Also, family members, they had been doing phone calls back and forth to the wife, the girlfriend, and they were out of contact for that same time frame on it. And they did have cell phone reception in the area they were at. That night we went back, we retraced our entire steps. And I'm one, when I did the investigation, they showed me, said, yeah, we've got a cooler here. I popped the cooler open looking for, you know, potentially alcohol. Nothing like that. Water. I checked everything they had. There's no signs that, you know, anything else would have affected that lapse of time on there by, you know, other methods. We walked the whole region down there. They showed me where they'd been at. They retraced all their steps. And they were extremely scared. Best way to describe it. The 19-year-old was kind of like, almost like acting like Barney Fife. He was right on the edge of the seat. Any little sound he heard in the woods, he was just jumping all over the place. And what I didn't tell him is that night when we were walking around, at one time when they reacted, I'm normally very easygoing. It takes a lot to get my attention like that. But one of the noises they heard off in the distance, I sensed something myself in that direction. And the reason I say sensed is that I have had some experiences when doing these investigations where I felt a presence or felt some maybe energy off in a distance or energies around me. And I felt like an energy off in one distance. But I acted like nothing happened. We finished out going through the investigation at night. I even collected all the clothes that they had, which I've got out being researched and analyzed. And what I didn't tell them is that the following week I went back down myself at about 4 in the morning. I wanted to first of all see if they were down there at that time, which they weren't. Secondly, I wanted to take and basically retrace their steps as close to the time as what I could that they were there. And when I was walking around, I took the typical instruments and investigated the views. I didn't pick up any magnetic anomalies. I didn't pick any unusual electric fields up or nothing like that. But I was walking around the region where they were at. I started walking around from there, started walking around the rest of the park. And I hit one spot that I'm looking at some of the instruments in my hand, and again, it's completely black, completely dark out, almost no ambient light. Just a little tiny flashlight I had in my hand. And all of a sudden, when I hit one spot, I sensed something. I felt an energy. And I said, whatever it was here. And I looked down. I was standing in an impression of burnt grass.
Really?
The same size as my shoulders. And it was the only spot where you could see that same type of damage to grass. But I just felt something was there. Since that time, I've had contact with both of them. A few weeks after the event, the 47-year-old was still extremely nervous. He said for a number of nights he never went out of the house after dark. As a matter of fact, the 19-year-old stayed at the home of the 40-some-year-old, as it like a family group, and they basically all slept in the same room. The husband, the wife, the girlfriends, everybody stayed in the same room because they're totally scared at night. Here's something that freaked that individual out so bad. They wouldn't go out at night, and he was a construction worker. He also was trained in martial arts, and I knew his instructor. I trained in martial arts myself. And, I mean, there was no reason he should have been that shaken up. But whatever happened to him left an impression that even we've talked after that time, I mean, it still extremely bothers him. Because he doesn't say it was a UFO, but he says, I missed 3 hours and 45 minutes, basically, that I cannot explain. And I have no clue what happened, neither one of us. They don't remember anything that time frame.
I can certainly see why that's scary. Now, this is kind of interesting because this is now the third story that I've heard when someone was fishing. There was that famous one down in, I want to say, Louisiana, and I had the gentleman on the show where the supposed aliens had, like, cones coming out of their head. Drawing a blank on who that is, really nice guy. And then, of course, the Allagash incident. When they were out fishing in their canoe. So, caution to everyone going fishing. Look out.
yeah, exactly. Especially in Lonely State Park all night long.
Yeah, it's funny about parks. You know, you hear a lot of things about parks. People missing and all kinds of weird stuff. Have you been in touch with these people since and talked about this?
we exchanged emails not long ago, but this, I've had the close-up being reviewed, being looked at, and we did find some materials on the close, but we're going to do a closer investigation. And they didn't really comment about their condition right now, but I can tell that the older gentleman is still upset in the correspondence on it. It was very brief. The 19-year-old, the last I had contact with him before that was like a few months ago, and he was pretty much coming back to normal. But again, you think about his age, he's 19 years old. He's probably going to be the most likely one to return back to normal. Somebody who's a little bit older is going to be more upset potentially by something like this. And especially, he's an individual who, as his wife described it, he's very much has to be in control of time. If he says he's going to be at some place at 8 o'clock, he doesn't want to get there at 8:01.
Yeah.
So now he has somebody basically taking 3 hours and 45 minutes of his life away, and that's the extremely upsetting part. And that's what he wants an answer for.
Yeah, that would, when it happens like that, I mean, I just can't even imagine what that's like. But, you know, to have two people have it at the exact same time, it really is something that, you know, can't be explained too easily, that's for sure.
Exactly, and I turn it this way. I said either they were two of the best liars I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these guys deserve the Academy Award. Or, in this case, something happened. And I've talked to Travis Walton, and again, Travis Walton's another one, to me, who has a very, very credible story.
I agree.
And they, showed similar signs of nervousness. Like when I talked to Travis, we'd be open and we'd discuss it, but we'd be just to see that that event just really shook up his entire life.
Yeah, I think he's come more at terms with it lately in the last couple of years. But the first time I met Travis, he just seemed very uncomfortable talking about it. And but I think he's kind of he's a little bit more at peace with the whole thing now. That's the last time I talked to him. He sort of mentioned in a roundabout way that that's how he was feeling.
And that's the impression I got, too, because we talked, I think it was 3 years ago now, he came in for a conference in Ohio. And he said basically what he's now come to peace with in his mind is that when that event happened, initially he thought, you know, somebody's trying to injure him or something like that. Now he thinks that maybe he got close enough to whatever this object was, that maybe almost like maybe like an electrostatic charge, maybe plasma,
right.
Who knows what. Something hit him, and they actually took him inside to help him more as first aid. And they wanted to make sure that he was okay before they let him back go.
Yes.
And that sounds like a extremely plausible explanation.
Yeah, he did mention that on one of my shows. And, yeah, I think that would certainly help you deal with it a lot better, that's for sure. But you're right,
okay.
He's one of the credible ones out there, in my opinion, anyway. And when you're face-to-face with someone, I think you really get a good feel about that.
Oh, you do. And I got to spend pretty much 3 days with him when we brought him in for the conference. And like I mentioned, my background is I've got a degree in HR, so I really looked at him personality-wise. The nonverbal communication I really looked at, and to me the signs were there that he was a very credible witness.
Right. So I wonder if those two guys ever went back fishing again together.
Well, I'm one of these individuals that it's not beyond me to hop in the car and again on a Friday, Saturday night, don't say anything to anybody about it and just drive down to Southern Ohio and see if they're there. That's the best way.
Wow, yeah. Hey, earlier you were mentioning you were up in Canada and then I believe you said Puerto Rico or some other place, I can't remember. Was it
mm-hmm.
Costa Rica or Puerto Rico?
Well, I've been doing long distance ones.
Yeah.
I wish I had the ability to be able to fly down, but I've been doing all my research by internet, online, or potentially putting individuals in contact with somebody in that region once we identify the case. One of the problems that we have sometimes is getting enough investigators to fill different regions.
Hmm.
And Canada right now is doing a good job getting new investigators in and building up a group of investigators. But it's not always that way in other countries. For some time, I was helping out in Canada. They also had me doing a lot of cases in England because they had roughly about 3 investigators for doing the entire country. And they were getting as many cases on an average what we would be doing in Ohio here, roughly about 30-plus cases a month. And when you've got 3 people, you just get totally overwhelmed and really you can burn you right out. So I'm one of these workaholics. I jumped in and said, sure, I'll help out with it. And they started giving me a lot of cases. A number of them you could explain. I came across individuals who sent in videos of drones. Even though they didn't believe it, they were drones. I've had situations where it may be of an object that was, matter of fact, one was insects even. Once you did an extreme magnification, you end up there was insects flying in front of somebody's camera. But then you get that aha moment again, where I had an individual who reported in this case, it was a historical case, but as a child, about 7, 8 years old, he was driving with the family on a little family excursion, and on the way back, heading back towards where they lived, they were going down one of these rural country roads, and they had the sunroof open on the car, and he looked out the sunroof, and he sees 3 objects approaching from the distance. When he sees the 3 objects approach, the car stalls out. Again, this is kind of like the Bad B movie. The car stalls out, lights go out, and next thing you know, he looks over at his mom, his dad, and the sisters, and they all basically fall asleep. And next thing he remembers is dad wakes up, they all wake up, dad restarts the car, they take off, they finish the trip, but they figure out that they're missing approximately 2 hours. Now you think, here's a younger child, and you know, how credible is he going to be? Well, the story wasn't rekindled by him. He was talking to his mother about UFOs, and she goes, well, don't you remember when we had our event? And he goes, what do you mean? And she started describing it, and he started remembering the details. But his mother brought it up to him. And I mean, it was a very deep story on there. And when he was talking about it, he says that later on, his dad, who was a little bit estranged from his father in later years, and one time his dad got mad at him, and his dad said, you're not my son. They took my son.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, exactly. And here, this was one of the cases that was potentially going to be overlooked, just because of sheer volume and just being able to keep up. But it was one of those, you know, stones you overturn, and here's a gem of a case. I put him in contact with some investigators from England then, once I'd done my research. They follow up, and then they actually got Kathleen Martin involved. Mm-hmm. And the investigator over in England had talked to him. He says, you know, this is another guy that, wow. He says, again, if this guy's not, didn't happen to him, again, he's a fantastic liar. I talked with a gentleman on Skype several times. Again, very, very credible. I watched the body language. And they found out the same thing when they did their local investigations. And all he was wanting was no fame, no glory. He says, just can you help me find an answer to what happened? He says, because this is what happened to him. And that's all he was looking for, just an answer.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. Now, as far as MUFON goes, I have a few friends that are, you know, work with MUFON, Mark D'Antonio on images and film, and a few other people. And there, but MUFON, there can be some controversy about that now and then. You know, I've heard, you know, I got a message from an old time investigator from all the way back in the 60s, you know, saying that MUFON was infiltrated by the government and by the CIA all the way back in the 1960s. And you kind of hear about stuff like that. What do you hear while you're involved in MUFON itself?
There's always the underlying rumors that potentially different people have given out different information. But in this case, I've had a couple cases where I've come across that the witness was approached shortly after the case was filed, by individuals from the outside the organization, and it makes you wonder on where, you know, where the source of that information was and on why these witnesses were contacted on what appeared to be a very good case that short of time after it happened. But the thing is, I mean, we're a volunteer organization. And when you've got a volunteer organization, you're pulling in the best people you can.
Right.
You're going off of the people, you know, trusting, you know, putting faith in that that's what they're here for.
I know there's always one or two bad apples in whatever organization. And, you know, I think there have been a few people that have kind of used the title for, you know, for a little bit of fame here and there, a little bit of screen time perhaps. But for the most part, I think that, you know, anyone that's out there volunteering and investigating is doing a good thing.
And that's it. I mean, I know a lot of people are putting in tons of hours volunteering for this project, that project, whatever they can to help out. And like you say, you're always going to have potentially somebody who decides to say, okay, I want to do this for my own personal interest. And the thing I can hope if somebody does that is, you know, they leave the organization, because we need people who are really trying to gather good information for the cause of trying to really figure out, you know, what these things are, where they're coming from, and just try to put an answer to it.
Right. Now, are you supported by MUFON, though? Or, like to say, if you're a field investigator and they ask you to go out to southern Ohio, are you supported by doing that, or... is your gas mileage, everything is all out of pocket, or do they actually help with expenses?
I'm supported by my pay I get from my regular job. There is no income coming in to support this from MUFON. Even any subscribers we have within the state of Ohio, because we have our own subscriber list, what we do with that money is that goes to our newsletter, that goes in towards hosting our conference each year. That doesn't go into the lining of anybody's pockets in the organization. It goes to support the web pages, things like that. When I go out and I do my investigations, that money's right out of my own pocket. And I'm very honest with people considering to become investigators, because they see TV shows sometimes and they say, you know, hey, I'd like to do this. This is kind of like CSI maybe. But then they realize that, number one, they've got to buy a manual. The manual comes out of their own pocket. They've got to study the manual. They have to do research. We have to get together. We have to meet. We do mentoring processes. Then they find out that it does sometimes add up to quite a bit. I do a number of programs across the state of Ohio trying to educate the public. And anything I get for that, all I ask is gas money just to get me from one event to another one to keep this type of a thing going. It's not trying to make me rich, because I know it wouldn't happen anyway, but I just want to take and really see ufology advance, inform the public that sometimes they base their opinion on UFO reports on what they see on the internet. Well, I saw this YouTube video, and that's one of my pet peeves. Okay, well, what's the YouTube video show you?
Well, it shows me it's alien.
Okay, and Mark D'Antoni would probably look at it and go, this isn't even good CGI. And I've done the same thing where I've gotten some photographs in, and I look at the photographs, and a couple of them actually came in from Canada, and it was basically an app putting an alien in a photograph. And it was extremely easy to detect it. And when I called the witness up, confronting him about it, oh, I don't know anything about that. I know absolutely nothing about phone apps. It must have installed on my phone all by itself. And when the camera went off, it must have actually gone off along with the camera at the same time. It just drives you crazy. And I spent I don't know how many hours getting the photographs, researching the photographs, because first time they said, I said, well, the photographs you uploaded, I want the ones directly from your camera. I don't want multi-generation copies. Well, one witness wouldn't submit me the original photographs because he knew what I was going to find. The other one I did, it was just like shooting fish in a barrel. It was too easy to identify. And I want to say, you know, here I've got two photographs from really about within 7 miles of each other of aliens. One is basically by a woodpile, and the other one is supposedly in a bedroom. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at these and saying, you know, they must have the same poses. These are very poseable aliens because, I mean, very photogenic. They take the same stature. I mean, they look the same. And the image it looked like, the one especially was drawn from almost like a Halloween costume of a child.
I was sent one of these, by the way.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, and it was by a swimming pool, yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, and you're right, it is an app. That's what I was told, yeah.
But here's the bad thing. In that same region that this witness was from, both these witnesses, I should say, were from, a week prior, I got a case, it seemed a little bit hokey, about an individual describing lights in his bedroom going around the inside of his bedroom. He also reported looking at the window and said he'd seen a gray alien looking in his window. Now, those are kind of ones that kind of make you go, mm-hmm, sure, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll check it out. We'll do the investigation, but, you know, maybe I'm not going to put, you know, all my hours in this one case. Well, I started doing a little internet research because I mentioned I love to do research. And the thing about today is where we benefit some from, like, social media. You can go into Facebook, you can see if a person has a face from the side, kind of profile them off of what you see there. You can go to LinkedIn. Well, I found a gentleman by the same name on LinkedIn in the same area who had a very professional background. And if I was in his field at his level, according to LinkedIn, if it's the same person, I wouldn't want myself identified with seeing aliens at a window. Hmm. When these other photographs came out, they started posting stuff in local newspapers.
Oh, no.
And I found local newspapers from the region regarding these events. And next thing you know, I tried to reach out and contact this witness, which may have had an incredible story on there. And he basically disappeared into the woodwork. And I think a lot of it was because of the notoriety from the other photographs and stuff on there. And he may have been one of these people who, again, had one of these tremendous cases. But I was never able to make contact because of the related events, because of a couple of people pulling some hoaxes in that same area.
Gee, that's very ironic. Now, when MUFON gets these cases, I know Roger Marsh does a lot of blogging about the cases that come in. When they get these cases that come in, how do they delegate where a case is going to go? You know, is it always by region, or sometimes do they go by the type of case it is?
Well, it actually goes both ways. You've got, first of all, lower profile cases, which are not, let's say, for example, abduction. Let's say, for example, something that's maybe like a landing, something that's an extremely close encounter. Those cases, first of all, get delegated down to the state. So what MUFON does is when you report a case, like right now I'm in Ohio, the case they look at, they say this is from Ohio, let's send it to Ohio and let's let their team look at it. I receive the case because I'm the one who assigns all cases within the state, and I've got approximately 10 investigators right now in the state. That what I do is I look at the region they live in and assign cases based on the region they're at. The few exceptions I may make is if I see that one investigator is getting overloaded because, let's say, Cincinnati has more cases than maybe some other region, I'll take and maybe try to spread the wealth a little bit. Another thing I look at is if you get that aha moment that maybe this case has a little bit more substance to it than maybe what people realize, then you may reach out to a little bit more senior investigator and delegate that case down to them. But when you get cases, in this case, like the abduction situation we had, we've got the STAR team, and not all states have a STAR team, but a number of states have, it's more like an immediate response team. So when that case comes in, the state director is also notified, but it gets delegated down to STAR team members from that state. And our goal is to make contact with the witnesses within 3 hours. We want to be on that scene as close as we can, especially if you figure that, what if we had like a Roswell crash here in Ohio? We want to get there before these green trucks come up with canvas bats on it and ferret everything away. We want to get that first opportunity. They're also forming a newer team now that's going to be on a similar nature where when these high-profile cases come in again, extremely high-profile, they get, again, more seasoned veterans out there immediately to handle these. So it's really kind of like they're looking at the case, the type of case coming in. They want the best people handling that as possible.
I see. Now, Wright-Patterson in Dayton, Ohio, is there a lot of things happening in that area in particular?
We get a number of reports from that region down there. And sometimes, depends on the time of year, there's an area called Middletown, Ohio, down there, which has skydivers. And guess what they like to skydive with?
Flares, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And every July, June, July, we can always expect who knows how many reports coming in from skydivers. And you go to their website and you say, well, we didn't know that we were going to attract attention like this. But then when you look at their advertisements, they say that we have been known to make news media that draws attention to your event if you're considering hiring us, which meant that it would be featured in national news or local news because of UFO reports is what it really boiled down to. We get those. We get the Chinese lanterns. But then there are people reporting seeing objects around the white pad area. And I'm kind of a believer that, you know, maybe that Wright Pat, and not just because it's in my own state, but maybe Wright Pat is more of a central area where this stuff is being housed at. Had the Keck stuff.
It just comes up too many times, and it has to have something going on there. I've always been fascinated with that.
Well, so have I. And as a kid, going back in the 60s, I remember talking to one of my buddies whose brother was a security down at Wright Pat on the base itself. And he was telling his younger brother about the fact that there was an area down there they were told to kill anybody if they ever got inside this building.
Jeez.
And it made me wonder what that building was now all these years later. Was it something maybe military related? Or who knows, maybe it goes back to something being hidden down there out of public sight.
Right. Right. So you just talked a minute ago about Chinese lantern. That's another headache. The hoax, the videos on YouTube, that's another headache. Now we have drones coming on strong, and I think that's going to make things even more tough. I know there's a lot of toy drones out there that someone could possibly mistake for something, but do you hear about drones at all?
Yes, they do. We've had several reports come in for Ohio that, you know, the investigator's opinion was they were seeing a drone. I had one come in from northern United Kingdom, and the witness submitted me a video where you could see an object going up besides a church steeple. It went up several hundred feet almost instantaneously, hovered there for about 5 minutes without any motion whatsoever, had a fairly intense light on it, and dropped exactly the way it came back up after about 5 minutes. When I questioned the witness on it, if anybody was flying drones in that region, he really got hot. He says, I thought MUFON was a credible organization. He says, all you're trying to do is discredit what I saw. I said, no, I'm just trying to see if we can find a logical answer first. I'm not saying that's what it is, but I'm looking for a limiting to know. Well, he says, well, nobody flies them around here, so that's it. He says, but I'll check it out. Several days later, he emailed me back and said, nope, 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 nobody flies them. Absolutely not. Well, I did my own research, and even though I'm 3,000 miles away, 2,000 miles away, I found, first of all, a secondary angle of the video. That same night, they had a fireworks display going on in the region they were at. Somebody was flying the drone to film the fireworks. Secondly, he said nobody in the region had a drone. Well, he was in a town called Peterhead. And I could make all sorts of jokes about that, which I won't.
Okay.
But in this case, you go down basically where he lived at, out of his flat, and about 200 feet from his flat is this hobby shop that sells drones, helicopters, and all sorts of little vehicles like that. And they had a great website where they dealt all over the country. And I really want to get sarcastic and say on the way to the pub, you know, when you're heading down there some night, you know, kind of look over to your left-hand side and wave hi to them in a hobby shop as they're selling their drones. But you know, you can't get like that with a person. You have to be respectful. So, I just said, you know, hey, this is what my findings are. Unfortunately, we like it too bad. You know, I'm sorry, you know. But without a doubt, that one was a drone. I also had an aerial one from over London that they were flying drones out doing some sort of a maybe mapping surveillance over downtown London over the area where they're doing commercial stuff at. But you could tell it when you blew the image up. You actually had it. It was an extremely high-quality image, by the way, that the person sent. And once you magnified it, you could see exactly what it was. But you're right. That is going to be a major problem in ongoing years. And we'll probably find more restrictions on drones around certain areas, especially airports, things like that.
Yeah, they really have to figure out how to map the traffic out on how all that's going to work. And, you know, Amazon has an idea of delivering packages. And, you know, I mean, these things will happen eventually. It just all has to be figured out. And meanwhile, though, you know, people are, you know, calling in reports. It makes it harder and harder for an investigator, I'm sure.
It does. I mean, when you get, let's say, 30, 40 reports in a month, you've got, in this case, 10 investigators, and you've got 90 days once a case comes in to close the case down. The workload can build up substantially. I mean, we may have to be driving out to different witnesses' locations, maybe not one trip, maybe multiple trips. The internet research, trying to find out if there's a plausible explanation. Was it aircraft? Maybe they saw Venus. I mean, we're getting that right now this time of year again. But why, you know, really try to tie up our time? And especially, you know, it cost us money in the process. When we'd really love to dedicate, you know, as much time as possible to these extremely interesting cases out there, rather than being distracted by somebody, you know, just trying to pull a hoax.
Yeah. It really muddies the water. Well, do you have a website? We're just about out of time here. Do you have a website?
Yes, we do. The website is called MUFONOhio.com. And we post a lot of our events that we've got going on. This year, as a matter of fact, to kind of do a little promotion here, we've got our Ohio MUFON conference coming up in June. And it's going to be the first weekend of June. And we're fortunate enough to have James Fox coming in, who did two fantastic documentaries. I Know What I Saw and Out of the Blue. He's going to be one of our featured speakers. Along with Nick Redfern's coming in. He just is releasing a brand new book he's going to be talking about. And then we've got a third individual speaking that day, who's Terry Ray, who's a field investigator from Pennsylvania.
Oh, is he the one on the orbs?
Yes, he is.
Okay. Yeah, I've been trying to reach him, actually. Anyway, thanks so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. All right, everyone, I have some bad news for you. The internet is down. There's high winds where I'm at. I was not able to do the live show part two. So Chip is probably going to be on next week. And again, I apologize for that. So that's the end of the show. And I apologize to the supporters for not being able to put up the full two-hour show. I mean, no one really wants to just listen to me talk for a full hour, I don't think. So anyway, again, I apologize. Internet was down. We had trouble at the Dark Matter Radio Network as well because a computer went down. So it was one of those nights. Anyway, I want to thank Alejandro Rojas for the news, and I also want to thank our guest, Tom Wortman. And after that, I want to thank Terry Lloyd Whitehouse and Bruce Rainier for our music. If you go on our website, podcastufo.com, you'll see a new blog posted by Michael Lauk, and that is on comic books and UFOs. And I also want to thank Peggy Shunning for managing our Facebook page. Remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. And again, if I could talk an hour and make a lot of sense and make it interesting, I certainly would give it a try. But I can't really think of enough to say to fill up a whole hour. And again, I do apologize for the supporter. I will somehow try to make that up to you, maybe have an extra long show. So this is Martin Willis saying, keep your eyes to the sky.